A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corin. So last week, you know, got exposed to the fascinating world of high quality permanent markers and paint markers. Who knew there was such a thing? All this time, all these years, buying these garbage permanent markers in, you know, wherever they're sold. And as you know, Hannah and I are moving in a couple of months. And I spent the weekend organizing tools, or half of the weekend. And there's a great feeling we're getting rid of what we don't need. And then based on previous moves, and I have to say, the episode about how the pros move, the roadies and the diplomats and the military, was actually great. It kind of reframed the whole moving thing for me from, oh gosh, I can't believe we have to do this yet again, to, well, if we're going to have to do it, I'm going to be slightly ridiculous about it and make it the most over-the-top organized move in history. So I'm out there with my markers, and I mean, I didn't even know solid markers, those things are beasts. They will survive a nuclear plant, apparently. So I've got all my outdoor stuff, all my toolboxes kind of mapped out based upon what you told me to do in that episode, or the pro moves, getting a manifest, and I'm kind of set now. But I thought, while the topic is fresh in brain, I'd ask for my last permanent marker questions. What I've taken from the episodes we did so far is all these weird things in DIY, like, why does this double-sided adhesive not stick on? Or why does, you know, I wrote on a permanent marker on a Ziploc bag and it just fades off. All this comes down to really basic chemistry. And if you understand the chemistry that you need, you don't even, you know, it's less about the exact type of marker and more about, you know, what you're looking for. So here's a few more that I thought I'd run by you. Number one, let's say you wanted to mark something that was going to survive not just one but multiple trips through the dishwasher. What are you looking for there? And let's say this is a fork of the first one, might be the same answer. You wanted something that would be dishwasher safe, and maybe you're marking, let's say, a bottle. You know, one of those feeding bottles just on the outside. I don't know why you'd want to do this, just go with me for a second. And therefore there is a concern of food safety and maybe even infant safety. So you don't want somehow that in the course of putting this through a dishwasher, any nasty chemicals are going to be leaching in potentially to the bottle. That might be the same thing, or maybe I'm imagining this, but that's my second question. Marker number two, marker chemistry question two, getting things that will survive the washing machine. So this environment, we need something that'll survive exposure to water, detergent, a good deal of abrasion, and we also need it to not leach out of the clothing into the rest of our laundry, because that would make people very sad. I've seen these laundry permanent markers and haven't tried them out yet. But they would be handy. You know, the more organized you get, the more you appreciate it's nice to be organized. I can see why they have uses. And finally, this is, I think, a general, much more general case. We talked about Ziploc bags as being super difficult, and there's this pen called the Sakura IdentiPen that is like the king of writing on freezer bags. And if I recall correctly, it's because it's xylene based, and xylene is, you know, it's a bad chemical from what I gather, but it's also bad to waste money on markers that don't actually do the job, and you end up having to remark. So I guess my question and feeling is that unless the tiny exposure from writing on the odd plastic surface is catastrophically bad, that seems like a fair trade-off. So if you were marking up, let's say, for our move again, you have some plastic surfaces, say that you have like a couple of electronics and they've got that kind of casing on them, a marker. If it's a black surface for electronics, you're into paint pen territory, which we covered. But if it's not, black, then paint pens are kind of messy, as I learned very quickly last week. So if you can mark those things, does it have to be a xylene-based marker if you're marking plastics to get results to actually sort of bed down into it? And finally, on the all-important topic of surface prep, do you always have to do that with your isopropyl and after you have done your surface prep? How long do you need to wait before you go over with the marker? For xylene, I guess what I'm wondering is, almost all the markers you find in non-industrial suppliers will say we're xylene free. And I guess that, I wonder, does that mean it's not going to work as well on plastics, metals, and all the other kind of tough materials you might want to get marks on? Herman and Corin, we got more marker questions, more marker trivia. And the final question, sorry, I've given you a list again. Here's what I found so far. Art supply stores are great, but there's a limit. They won't have the truly industrial stuff. If you do want to get to these very heavy duty xylene markers, where'd you buy those from? Will any hardware store carry them, or do you need to go to more like an industrial supplier? Over to you.
You think a Sharpie is permanent until you run a Ziploc bag through the dishwasher. Not even a full cycle. 10 minutes in, the label's gone, and now you're guessing which container has the leftover chili and which has the lentil soup.
That moment is where the whole conversation starts, isn't it? Because permanent is a marketing word. It means the ink won't come off with water at room temperature in a light rub. That's it. That's the entire chemical guarantee.
The listener's been down this rabbit hole hard. He's moving in a couple of months, spent the weekend organizing tools, and somewhere in that process he became a marker obsessive. He's been through our previous dives on Ziploc bags and double-sided adhesive and surface energy, and now he's back with the advanced course. 3 environments, 3 chemical challenges, dishwasher, washing machine, and industrial plastics. And the full question, if something survives the dishwasher, does that automatically make it food safe? Spoiler! Absolutely not. And for infant bottles, that distinction matters.
What I love about these questions is they all come from the same insight he landed on last time. Once you understand that a marker is just a delivery system for a chemical bond, solvent carries the pigment, resin locks it to the surface, and the surface either accepts it or rejects it, you stop shopping by brand name and start shopping by chemistry. These 3 environments he's asking about each defeat standard permanent markers in a completely different way. The dishwasher attacks with heat and caustic detergent. The washing machine uses surfactants and mechanical abrasion. And low-surface energy plastics just refuse to bond with anything that isn't aggressive enough to partially dissolve them.
He's also asking the safety question that most people skip. Xylene gets a bad reputation, and he's wondering whether the tiny exposure from riding on a plastic surface is actually worth worrying about, or whether xylene-free is mostly a marketing label designed to sell more markers at higher margins. And then the practical closer. Where do you even buy the industrial stuff that actually works?
We've got a lot of chemistry to unpack. Let's start with the dishwasher, because it's the most aggressive environment of the 3, and it reveals the most about how markers actually work, and where they spectacularly fail. To understand why the dishwasher is such a brutal test, I first need to frame the whole problem space, because the listener's questions all orbit around the same 3 variables. Solvent system. That's what carries the pigment to the surface. Resin or binder. That's what locks it in place once the solvent evaporates. And surface energy. That's how willing the substrate is to accept the ink in the first place. Every marker failure you've ever experienced comes down to a mismatch in one of those 3.
Permanent, in the chemical sense, means exactly none of those 3 things. It means the resin is water insoluble at room temperature. That's the entire technical definition. You can take a piece of paper with Sharpie on it, run it under a cold tap, and nothing happens. Congratulations, it's permanent. Crank the water to 75 degrees Celsius and add sodium hydroxide at pH 11, which is what your dishwasher does, and you're no longer in the same universe.
In each of the three environments, the listener asked about attacks a different part of that triangle. The dishwasher is thermal cycling plus caustic hydrolysis. The detergent literally breaks the chemical bonds in the resin. The washing machine is lower temperature but adds surfactants engineered specifically to lift oils and particulates, plus mechanical abrasion from tumbling. And industrial plastics like polyethylene and ABS have surface energy so low that standard solvent systems can't wet the surface at all. The ink beads up or sits on top and flakes off.
One marker can't rule them all, because each environment defeats the bond through a different mechanism. The dishwasher is a chemical attack on the binder. The washing machine is a physical attack on adhesion. Plastics are a refusal to bond in the first place. You're not solving one problem with three variations. You're solving three completely different problems that happen to all involve ink.
Then there's the fork the listener raised, which is genuinely important and almost nobody thinks about. Dishwasher safe and food contact safe are two entirely separate certifications. A marker can survive 500 dishwasher cycles because it uses a glass frit binder that fuses to the surface and still contain cadmium or lead pigments that you absolutely do not want anywhere near an infant feeding bottle.
Survives the dishwasher and won't poison the baby. Different engineering requirements, it turns out.
And the distinction matters even if you're only marking the outside of the bottle, because thermal cycling can drive small molecule migration through certain plastics. The pigment doesn't have to touch the contents to be a problem. It just has to be on the other side of a polymer barrier that's being heated and cooled repeatedly. We'll get into the specific certifications in a minute, but that fork question is the right one to be asking. And that brings us to what a dishwasher actually does to ink. Three things all at once. First, thermal cycling. A standard cycle hits 75 degrees Celsius, about 167 Fahrenheit. That's hot enough to soften most acrylic and alkyd resin binders. Second, the detergent is caustic. We're talking pH 10 to 12, sodium hydroxide, sodium carbonate, and at that pH, ester bonds in polyester and polyurethane resins start hydrolyzing. The polymer chains literally break apart. Third, you've got high-pressure water jets blasting the surface for an hour plus. Even if the binder survives the heat and the chemistry, the mechanical force can peel it off.
It's not one failure mode, it's a coordinated assault.
And most permanent markers use resins that fail on all three fronts. The Sharpie binder is some variant of alcohol-soluble resin, great for writing on paper, completely useless against a dishwasher. To survive, you need a fundamentally different chemistry. The markers that actually work are ceramic-based. Think Edding 4500, or the industrial glass markers used in laboratories. They don't use a solvent-dissolved resin at all. The ink contains finely ground glass frit, tiny glass particles mixed with inorganic pigment. When you write with it, the solvent evaporates and leaves a chalky layer of glass powder and pigment on the surface. It's fragile at that point. You can wipe it off with your finger.
Which seems like the opposite of permanent.
Until the first dishwasher cycle. That's the clever part. The heat of the dishwasher, that same 75 degrees, is what cures the glass frit. The glass particles soften slightly and fuse to each other and to the substrate. It's essentially a low-temperature enameling process. The marker doesn't become permanent until after you run it through the dishwasher. The curing happens in your kitchen, not in the factory.
The dishwasher is the kiln.
A very wet, very soapy kiln. And once that glass frit is cured, it's chemically inert. It doesn't care about pH 10 detergent. It doesn't care about thermal cycling. The glass already melted and resolidified. The Edding 4500 is rated for over 500 dishwasher cycles. That's industrial glass marking territory.
Which sounds like the answer to the listener's first question. If you want dishwasher survival, buy a ceramic glass marker. But then he asked the fork, what if that bottle is an infant feeding bottle?
This is where people get into trouble, because they assume dishwasher safe means food safe. They're completely separate certifications. A glass frit marker like the Edding 4500 survives 500 cycles, but Edding does not certify it for food contact. And the reason matters. Those inorganic pigments that survive the kiln temperatures, the yellows, the reds, the oranges, they're often cadmium sulfides, lead chromates, heavy metal compounds. The glass matrix traps them, so they're stable on the surface, but you don't want those elements anywhere near something a baby drinks from.
Even on the outside of the bottle.
Even on the outside. Because here's the mechanism that nobody thinks about. During the thermal cycle, the plastic of the bottle itself, especially polypropylene, which is what most feeding bottles are made from, undergoes slight expansion and contraction that can create microscopic pathways for small molecule migration. The heavy metal pigment isn't leaching through the plastic in giant quantities, but the regulatory threshold for infant products is essentially zero. If the marker isn't certified, you're running an experiment on your own kid.
Which is not the kind of citizen science most parents are looking for.
So what do you use? The Staedtler LumoColor Permanent Model 318-9 is explicitly certified under FDA 21 CFR 175.300, which is the regulation for indirect food contact from adhesives and coatings. It uses a solvent-based system, not ceramic, so it doesn't need heat curing. The trade-off is durability. It's rated for about 50 dishwasher cycles, not 500. The resin binder is food grade, but less chemically resistant than fused glass.
You're trading permanence for safety.
That's the honest fork. For dishwasher survival alone, ceramic glass marker. For dishwasher survival plus food contact safety, you need a marker with explicit FDA certification, and they're rare. The practical compromise is to mark the bottom of the bottle, not the side, where it gets less direct spray, and reapply after every 10 to 15 cycles. Or use a physical label with food-grade adhesive and mark the label instead. The listener's instinct was right. The two questions have different answers. And for infant safety, the certification matters more than the durability.
The dishwasher fork is clear. Ceramic for survival. Food-grade solvent for safety. But the washing machine is a completely different beast, and you're right to separate it out. Lower temperature, sure. 30 to 40 Celsius most cycles. But you've got surfactants designed specifically to lift oils and pigments off surfaces, plus an hour of mechanical abrasion from tumbling. The failure mode isn't chemical breakdown of the binder. It's physical liftoff and bleeding into the wash water. Nobody wants their kid's name tag turning the entire load of whites into a tie-dye project.
That bleeding problem is the one that makes people swear off marking clothes entirely. The mechanism is actually fascinating. Standard permanent markers, your Sharpie, your Bic mark. It used pigment particles in the range of 0.1 to 0.3 microns. Those are tiny enough to migrate through the weave of the fabric once the solvent evaporates. They're not locked in place, they're just sitting there. Add warm water, add surfactant, add agitation, and those particles lift right out and float into the wash water. That's how you get the pink sock situation.
Laundry markers aren't just regular markers in a different package.
Not at all. Products like the Sharpie Rub-A-Dub or the Dycom textile marker use an alcohol-based solvent system, same as a regular permanent marker, but the resin is fundamentally different. It's a cross-linking polymer. The molecules form chemical bridges between each other as they dry, creating a three-dimensional network that's insoluble in water. But here's the trick that most people miss. That cross-linking reaction doesn't complete at room temperature. You have to heat set it. Either run it through the dryer on high or iron it at 150 Fahrenheit plus. Without that heat step, the cross-linking never finishes and the marker is no more permanent than a standard Sharpie on fabric.
The heat is what locks the cage.
And the pigment particles themselves are physically larger, 0.5 to 2 microns, instead of 0.1 to 0.3. After the solvent evaporates and the resin cross-links, those larger particles are physically trapped in the fabric fibers. The cross-linked resin encapsulates them like a microscopic shrink wrap. They can't migrate because they're too big to fit through the gaps in the weave, and even if they could, the resin shell won't dissolve in water.
Which explains why the label says heat set required, and everyone ignores it, and then they're shocked when the ink washes out.
Every single time. The heat setting step is the entire point. Without it, you've just written on fabric with a slightly fancier Sharpie.
Now, shifting to plastics, and this connects back to the Ziploc bag problem we've talked about before. The listener mentioned the Sakura IdentiPen, which has been in production since 1983 and is basically the gold standard for writing on low-density polyethylene freezer bags. The reason it works where everything else fails is xylene.
Xylene is worth understanding because it reveals the mechanism that makes any marker work on low-surface energy plastics. Plastics like polyethylene, polypropylene, ABS, their surface energy is so low that standard solvent systems can't wet the surface. The ink beads up, or it dries as a film sitting on top, and then it flakes off the moment you handle it. Xylene is different. It's a powerful aromatic solvent that partially dissolves the surface of the plastic itself. Not deeply, we're talking a few microns, but enough that the pigment becomes embedded in the substrate rather than sitting on top. It's the difference between painting a wall and tattooing skin. The pigment goes into the material.
Xylene is the chemical sandpaper that roughens the plastic at a molecular level, and then the pigment gets trapped in the grooves.
That's exactly the right image. And it's why the Sakura Identipin works on Ziploc bags, on electronics casings, IBS and polycarbonate blends, and on most injection molded plastics you'd encounter in a move. The xylene slightly etches the surface, the pigment sinks in, and when the solvent evaporates, the pigment is mechanically locked below the surface.
The listener also asked the safety question directly, and he's not wrong to ask it. Xylene has a reputation. What's the actual risk here?
The data is clear but needs context. Xylene is classified as a neurotoxin and a suspected carcinogen. OSHA sets the permissible exposure limit at 100 parts per million over an 8-hour workday. That's the level where chronic inhalation in an industrial setting becomes a health concern. Think factory workers, painters, people using xylene-based products, 8 hours a day in enclosed spaces. The amount of xylene in a single marker stroke is negligible. You'd have to be sniffing the marker tip for hours to approach anything close to the PEL. For occasional use, labeling boxes, marking electronics, writing on freezer bags, the exposure is trivial.
The xylene-free label on every consumer marker is marketing, not a meaningful safety distinction for the end user.
It's almost entirely a regulatory branding decision. Xylene-free markers substitute other solvents, alcohol, glycol ethers, cyclohexanone, that have their own toxicity profiles. Cyclohexanone, for example, has an OSHA PEL of 50 parts per million, which is half the limit for xylene. It's considered safer for chronic exposure, but for the occasional user, the difference is academic. The xylene-free label is designed to make you feel better at the checkout counter, not to protect you from a genuine hazard.
The real question is, if you don't want to use xylene, or you can't find it easily, what actually works on plastics?
Two alternatives stand out. The UniPaint PX21 uses cyclohexanone as its primary solvent. It bonds excellently to ABS, polycarbonate, and most electronics casings. The Marvi Uchida DecoColor uses diacetone alcohol, similar mechanism, slightly less aggressive on the plastic surface but still far better than alcohol-based markers. Both give you that same partial dissolution bonding without the xylene stigma. For the listener marking electronics casings and plastic bins for a move, the PX21 is probably the sweet spot. Industrial performance, lower toxicity profile, and you can actually find it at art supply stores without having to raid a chemical warehouse.
The listener asked about isopropyl alcohol specifically, and whether it's always necessary.
Isopropyl alcohol at 70% or higher is the standard degreaser, and it's fine for glass, metal, and most painted surfaces. But for plastics, it's often not enough on its own. The real enemy on injection molded plastics is mold release agent, a thin silicone or wax film left over from manufacturing. Alcohol won't reliably remove it. You need acetone for that, or better yet, light physical abrasion. A Scotch-Brite pad or 400 grit sandpaper, just a few passes, increases the surface area for mechanical adhesion by orders of magnitude. Clean with alcohol or acetone, abrade lightly, clean again, and then wait 30 to 60 seconds for the solvent to fully evaporate before you apply the marker. If you mark a surface that's still wet with alcohol, you trap solvent under the ink film and it'll never adhere properly.
The protocol is clean, scuff, clean, wait, mark. Not just wipe and write.
That 30 to 60 second wait is the step everyone skips because it feels like wasted time. It's not. That evaporation window is the difference between a mark that lasts 5 years and one that rubs off in a week.
Which brings us to the practical question the listener ended with. Where do you actually buy the industrial stuff? Because Home Depot and Lowe's are not stocking xylene markers next to the paint stir sticks.
They're not, and they never will. Hardware stores carry consumer grade. Sharpie, Elmer's, maybe Milwaukee Inksol if you're lucky. Those are alcohol-based, fine for wood and cardboard, useless for what we're talking about. For xylene-based or cyclohexanone-based industrial markers, you need industrial suppliers. McMaster Carr is the gold standard, part number 7540A11, xylene-based industrial marker, about 350 each, minimum order of 12. Granger carries similar lines. For smaller quantities, specialty art supply stores, Jerry's Artorama, Dick Blick, they stock the Uni Paint and Marvy lines. Online, there's markers.com and industrialmarker.com. The key is to search by solvent type, not brand. Type cyclohexanone marker into a search bar and you'll find the real stuff. Type permanent marker and you'll get 1,000 alcohol-based disposables that'll fail on plastic before you finish writing your name. So that's the sourcing side, but once you've got the right markers in hand, you still need to know when and how to use them.
Right, and that's where the decision tree comes in. So if you're keeping score at home, and the listener definitely is, he's got a color-coded manifest. The whole thing boils down to a decision tree. Environment first, then solvent system, then surface prep, then application. Skip any step and you're back to buying garbage markers that fail.
The tree is actually simpler than it sounds. Dishwasher, ceramic-based, or nothing. The Edding 4500 or equivalent. Washing machine, heat-set textile marker, and I mean actually heat-set dryer or iron, not just hoping for the best. Plastics, cyclohexanone or xylene-based. The Uni Paint PX21, the Sakura Identipen, the industrial stuff. A standard alcohol-based Sharpie will fail in all three of those environments, not might fail.
Surface prep is the step everyone wants to skip, and it's the step that determines whether your mark lasts 5 cycles or 500. For plastics, isopropyl alcohol plus light abrasion, Scotch-Brite or 400 grit. For fabric, wash and dry first to remove the sizing that's on every new garment. For glass and ceramic, acetone degreasing beats alcohol because it cuts through the invisible film that alcohol leaves behind.
That 30 to 60 second evaporation wait after cleaning. It feels like nothing's happening. Something is happening. The solvent is leaving. If you mark too soon, you trap it under the ink and the bond never forms.
On xylene, the listener's instinct was right. The xylene-free label is a red herring for end users. The real safety concern is chronic inhalation in manufacturing, 8 hours a day in a booth. For occasional use marking boxes and electronics, the exposure is trivial. If you need plastic adhesion, buy the industrial stuff and use it in a ventilated area. Don't let a marketing label scare you into buying a marker that won't work.
For food contact, and this is the one where you really don't want to get creative, look for FDA21 CFR 175.300 certification or just use a physical label. Tape plus marker. The convenience of direct marking is not worth the leaching risk for infant bottles. Even if you're marking the outside, thermal cycling can pull heavy metals through the plastic.
Where to buy? Art supply stores top out at prosumer quality. Hardware stores sell garbage for these applications. McMaster Carr, Granger. That's where the real stuff lives. Part number 7540A11. Xylene industrial marker, 350 each. Search by solvent type, not brand name. Cyclohexanone marker, gets you professional results. Permanent marker gets you 1,000 alcohol-based disposables that'll fail on your first Ziploc bag. And that's the thing. Permanent is a claim, not a property.
That brings us back to the bigger question lurking under all of this. The listener started this whole deep dive because of a move, a practical problem. But what he really uncovered is that permanent is a claim, not a property. And once you learn the chemistry for markers, you start seeing the same pattern everywhere. Adhesives that claim to be permanent but fail on low-energy surfaces. Coatings that say weatherproof but degrade under UV. Sealants that say waterproof but hydrolyze in exactly the same pH range that eats marker binders. The principles are identical. Surface energy, solvent compatibility, cross-linking, thermal degradation. Learn it once and suddenly half the products in the hardware store stop lying to you.
The entire adhesives aisle is just the marker aisle in a different form factor. Same chemistry, same trade-offs, same marketing claims that fall apart the moment you read the technical data sheet.
There's a tension coming that's worth watching. The regulatory push toward green solvents, water-based, bio-derived, low VOC, is real and accelerating, which is good. But the solvents that make permanent markers actually permanent on plastics are the ones being regulated out. Xylene, toluene, cyclohexanone, they're on the hit list. The replacement water-based systems don't etch the surface. They don't embed. They sit on top and wait to be rubbed off. We may be heading toward a world where truly permanent marking on plastics just isn't available at retail anymore.
The future is a Sharpie that's safe enough to drink and useless enough to hate.
That's the trade-off, performance versus environmental safety. I'm not saying it's the wrong trade-off, reducing industrial solvent exposure matters. But it's a trade-off that's happening, and most consumers don't know it's being made on their behalf.
The listener's approach is the right one. He stopped memorizing brand names and started asking what solvent system he actually needed. A marker is just a delivery system for a chemical bond. Understand the bond, and you can walk into any supplier and find the right tool. Memorize the brand, and you're helpless the moment they change the formula or discontinue the product.
Next time you're at the hardware store, read the solvent list, not the brand name. The chemistry tells the truth. The marketing tells you what you want to hear.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the early 1800s, European cartographers rediscovered a set of 9th century Islamic maps that included detailed coastlines of the Solomon Islands, islands that European navigators wouldn't officially chart for another 200 years. The maps were compiled by Persian geographer Ibn Khordadba from accounts gathered along Indian Ocean trade routes, but the originals were lost when the library at Rey was destroyed in the 12th century. The 1812 rediscovery came when a French expedition found a single surviving copy in a Cairo manuscript collection, mislabeled as a treatise on poetry.
Maps hidden in poetry. That feels about right.
The bigger thought here, and this is where we'll leave it, is that the listener's move prompted a genuine shift in how he sees products. That's rare. Most people organize for a move and buy whatever marker is at eye level in the hardware store. He reverse-engineered the chemistry instead. If you've got a weird prompt about adhesives, coatings, or anything else that claims to be permanent and isn't, send it to myweirdprompts.com. We are exactly the right kind of ridiculous for that conversation.
This has been My Weird Prompts, produced by Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps other over-organized moving obsessives find the show.
We're at myweirdprompts.com. See you next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. Until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.